Okay, back at it with Admiral Harry Cooper, talking about World War II history from the perspective of those daring young men, brave young men, in all services who fought in the submarine warfare. Especially tonight, we're looking at two new books about the U-boat service in Germany in World War II. How good, quality-wise, was this boat? How well built were they? I know the advanced models were awesome, but generally speaking, were they on a par with the American boats? Go ahead.
Compared to all the other services, all the other submarine services in the world, they were, in the beginning of the war, they were far and away better. Even up until the end of the war, they still could dive way deeper. In an American boat, for instance, if the skipper said, take her deep, he meant 300 feet. In the German boats, 300 meters would
wow.
be. Kretschmer was at 700 and something feet down when he was sinking, and they blew the tanks. U-81, the skipper, was, what the heck was his name? I'm away from my files. Anyhow, he wanted to see how deep the boat could go, and he got down to almost 1,000 feet, and he decided to come back up. And when he got up, it looked like an unfed old plow horse with the sides all puckered in, and it wasn't very useful after that. He gave it over to his first watch officer, which was Hanno Krieg, who was also a member of Shark Hunters. And he got a Knight's Cross with that submarine, but that was not presented by the submarine service. That was to the small boats, were a different division than the U-boats. A lot of people didn't know that. I mean, the little boats, not the Type 2s, but the Bieber and the Nager and the two-man and one-man torpedoes and the Linton speedboats. That was a whole different group.
All right. Number 14, and we got about 40-some pictures to get through in this hour, so let's roll.
Okay. I'll talk
all
fast.
Herr Rommel.
Except this one, I can't talk. Rommel, he was the biggest screw-up I think they had in the whole German Navy. When Kretschmer was just a cadet, he met Rommel, who was already an officer, and they were having coffee or whatever, probably beer, at the outside beer hall. And Rommel told Kretschmer that he was crazy. And Kretschmer says, and he pointed to the asylum. And Kretschmer says, well, if you're crazy, how come you're here? And Rommel says, well, they let us stay out until 9 o'clock at night. And Rommel says, and Kretschmer says, yeah, but it's already 10 o'clock. And Rommel says, see, I'm crazy. But his biggest screw up, he took over U-570. And it was a scene like you saw in Das Boot. He and his whole crew were falling down drunk, and they took off the next morning out into the North Sea, heavy weather, and they were all barfing their guts out. They were hungover. They were seasick. And he surrendered to an airplane. And he was told that if you dive, you know, we'll sink you, and nobody, and if you try to get into the water, we won't pick you up. So he stayed there while these airplanes circled overhead and had to wait until British surface ships got there. And that's when the Brits realized that setting their depth charges for 300 feet wasn't going to do any good because these guys were down at 600 feet. So Rommel, he was lucky that the Brits knew that he wouldn't live very long in a submarine or a Navy POW camp. So they stuck him in an Air Force POW camp, but the rest of the officers they put into a submarine POW camp, and Kretschmer was the ranking officer, so they had an honors court, and the first watch officer was told he had to escape and get to the port, which was not far away, and destroy the boat. Well, he escaped all right, but he got picked up by a bunch of home guard people, and when he tried to run for the woods, their shotguns ended his military career. Yeah. But this photo I know is rare, and I know it won't be on any of them internet sites yet until they see it here. Then they'll probably plagiarize it, because I got this one from Peter Hansen out of his own personal collection. So let's see how soon these internet sites come up with it.
Right.
Bums.
So, Ramlo was a bum. Speaking of bums.
Oh, Ramlo was just, he was the biggest, he destroyed more U-boats than anybody else, I think, because he let the Brits know, and then they let the Americans know, how deep these guys could go so they could reset their depth charges. In the beginning,
so
they couldn't set the depth charges.
Yeah.
Hmm?
He stayed in the camp during the war then, had the high life, good treatment.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, in the beginning, the Brits couldn't set their depth charges deep enough. They didn't have that kind of fuse, so they'd stuff soap in the sensor holes to help the depth charges go deeper. And then, you know, once they got the new fuses, that took a horrible toll on the U-boats.
All right. Okay, I want to look at this, The Truth is Sacred picture real quick and honor the artist, however you want to do that.
Yeah, that was Greg Galinsky again. Like I say, this guy is one hell of a talent.
Yeah, that's good. Very good. All right, next picture.
And that's
We're moving right through. Yeah,
moving right along. Number 16. This is another one of our members, Conrad Lovitz, at the bow of U-60. He didn't have to, he could walk on water there, you know, because frozen, he was throwing wads of snow at people above him. And I wonder if the recruiter told everybody about this kind of service, that you're up to your knees in ice water. And we've got quite a few photos and file in the book that were sent to us by Conrad. He was a member until his passing.
How did he take his own picture?
Well, he did. He gave his camera to some.
Well,
it's a selfie now, but he gave his camera to. They used Brownie box cameras, I guess. I don't know, but one of his crew buddies used his camera and took it.
All right. Crew buddy didn't get credit for the photo, though. Number.
I'm sorry about that.
It's all right. Number 17. Looks like Merry Christmas.
17.
Right.
Some of the crew of U-62, they're on board an accommodation ship, which is just a big ship that they use for barracks. Christmas time. How many of these guys came home? I don't know. I'd have to look at my charts.
Not many. Okay. We got action shot next. What do we got here?
Number
U-66 escapes, but U-117 is destroyed. Photo taken.
Right, U-117 was, a Navy PBY probably. And U-117 was a refueler, not a Type 14, but also one of the big boats used for refueling. And
the milk
it just
cow.
Finished refueling. Well, yeah, the 14s were the milk cows. But this was a 10B. Which had originally been designed for mine laying, but they couldn't do that anymore because mine sweeping was too good. So U-66 had just finished, and they transferred a wounded skipper off of, the wounded skipper or an officer off of U-117 and a doctor off of U-117 onto 66. And you can see by the wake behind U-66, it was already starting to get underway. U-117 got caught dead in the water, and it got sunk. And the guys in U-66 dived, and they told me later that they one of the members was Vince Nosh. He was a member of Shark Hunters, and he said they were down about 100 feet or so, and they could hear the sounds of U-117 sinking past them and breaking up as it went down.
Oh,
hell of a situation.
Not good. Not good. War is hell. Hell on earth.
Unfortunately,
profitable to the banksters who finance both sides. All the wars
true
are bankers' wars. We know that. Okay. Number 19, U-69?
Right, 19. Just shows that it's not all wild combat and everything. These guys are relaxing. You see one guy's reading the local newspaper, and they're beside some other kind of vessel, and they're mm-hmm. just taking it easy, doing nothing. Mm-hmm. Same with the next photo, number 20. I don't know how they would consider that relaxing, but they're all on the saddle tanks of U-72. Just, I don't think I'd like to do that. One slip, and they got to fish you out of the water.
Huh? Doesn't look like it's very hot there either.
Yeah, you look down there at the bottom. It looks like there's a lot of snow and ice.
It kind of does, doesn't it?
Yep.
It's not ivory soap bubbles. That's
no,
for sure.
Surprisingly enough, Germany gets damn cold in the winter time.
Yeah. What type boat is this, Harry? Do we know?
I believe that's a 7 because of the bulging saddle tanks. The 9s mm-hmm. went straight down from the side, but the 7s had those ballast tanks sticking way out, mm-hmm. the saddle tanks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Number 21. What do we have here?
21. This is just U-73 returning to La Spezia with an Italian launch as an escort on 5 September 1942. The fact that it's in La Spezia, which is Italy, means uh-huh. that this boat has come through the gates of hell. It has come through Gibraltar. And gotten into the Mediterranean. The Mediterranean was not a very safe place to operate because the water was very clear and in most cases very shallow, 300 or so feet. So the anti-submarine guys had pretty good pickings there.
The best movie about World War II, you want to see what it was like? Das Boot.
Oh, that was awesome. That was awesome. There are lots of U-boat movies, but then there's Das Boot.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. You want to live history, that's it. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's an incredible boat. And the skipper who was portrayed in that movie was mm-hmm. a member of Shark Hunters. He did not get killed, as it saw in the movie. But that boat, U-96, we'll see a picture of that in a minute, Boat of the mm-hmm. Smiling Sauce Fish, the skipper was Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrook, and he was a member of Shark Hunters until his early passing. But here on photo 22, we see the crew of U-76. They're very fortunate. They got captured. You look at the uniforms, mm-hmm. and you'll see the British Tommies guarding these guys. So they've been captured. And they're going to POW camp to spend the rest of the war.
Huh. We don't know how they were captured, do we?
No, if I was at home with the files in front of me, I could tell you everything about it.
Sure. Well, they were lucky ones. All right. U-85. A lot of beards there. Long patrol.
Yeah. They rarely shaved when they were on patrol, partly because they wanted to look, you know, grown up. And also, fresh water was very hard to come by on board. The desalinators only made enough to replenish the batteries and maybe a gallon a day for the crewmen, each guy. So they didn't shave, and they wanted to look like pirates. Unfortunately, these guys, there's no other way to say it, they were murdered. They were sunk off. They were the first U-boat sunk off the coast of the United States, and it was, I believe, April 1942. And unlike what one of the internet sites says, it was not January. They were not part of Operation Paukenschlag. They came along later, but they were the first ones sunk. The destroyer USS Roper spotted them on the surface. Of course, they were on the surface. The water there was only 70 or 80 feet deep. You can't dive a submarine in that. So it was in the middle of the night. They started to chase them. And U-85 was running for deeper water straight east. But they could make only 17 knots, and the destroyer was making 18 knots. So it was a pretty obvious situation that's going to end badly. And the artillery, the guns on the destroyer, punched holes in the submarine, and it was going down. So these guys got off the boat. Most of the crew got off the boat and was in the water waiting to be picked up. But Roper steamed back and forth through these guys, dropping depth charges and slicing them up into props. And later on, he said that, well, he knew U-boats always operated in pairs, and he wanted to kill the other submarine, which, of course, there was no other submarine. He got awarded the Navy Cross, which is one step below the Medal of Honor. The skipper, Howe was his last name. He got the Navy Cross.
American boat?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well,
yep, U.S.
pretty
Navy.
Disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah. But then they, then the Navy tried to hush it up. Even the internet sites didn't catch on this one, but the Navy tried to hush it up. They said that 22 of these guys were wearing civilian clothes and had large amounts of American money in their pocket, and they were going to be smuggled ashore.
Yes,
yeah, they tried for a little while to push that, but then somebody realized if it takes 44 men to run a submarine and you put 22 of them ashore 1,000 miles away from home, you ain't going to get home. So they just gave it up. And the boat is still down. It's down, I think, in 90 feet, and it's a popular dive site. Now, these guys died for it.
So the boat took a couple rounds and filled up with water and sunk.
Exactly. It got hit. I think there was 3 inches who were firing at it, and the first one hit in the conning tower and blew out a chunk, and so you can't dive if you got holes in your boat.
No. All right. Number 24. 96.
24. This is the one I was telling you about, the boat of the Smiling Sawfish. You see the guy on the right on the conning tower up there. That was the skipper, Heinrich Lehmann Willenbrook. And he was a member of Shark Hunters until his passing.
Wow.
We exchanged some letters back and forth. This is the boat that Buchheim was aboard. He was a propaganda company, a PK guy, and he was a sketch artist, and he was also taking a ton of movies and still photos, which he hid away when the war ended, and then he pulled them back out later on, and he wrote the book, Das Boot, and then they made the movie.
Oh, that's where it came from. Oh, interesting. Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's where it came, this boat here. You remember the movie. It had the Smiling Sawfish.
Yeah,
but
sure
in real life, this boat was not sunk, and that skipper was not killed. But, you know,
Is that film allowed to be shown freely in Germany? Wasn't there some real resistance in the beginning to it for some reason?
That's a good question. I don't know. Right now, you know, that film's 30 years old. So I don't know if it's shown anywhere anymore, but I don't know. I don't know the answer.
Okay. U-99, picture number 25. U-99, Golden Horseshoe.
Yep, my good friend Otto Kretschmer. So many people think that the Golden Horseshoe was painted on the conning tower like so many other Turmobzeichen were, but that's not the case with 99. That was an actual horseshoe. It got fouled in his anchor, so they brought it up, cleaned it up, painted it gold, and screwed it to the conning tower.
How the hell would a horseshoe end up getting fouled up in an anchor? That's an odd one.
In port.
Oh, okay. All right.
So
the
horseshoe you see is at an angle there with the opening down. And one time when I was visiting Otto, I said, you know, if you put the horseshoe with the opening down, your luck all runs out, and that's what happened to you. He said, well, in Germany, it doesn't make any difference. I said, yeah, but remember the guy who sank
Think
you,
about it.
McIntyre.
Think about it. Yeah.
think about it. The ship that sank him, HMS Walker, with McIntyre as the commander, he had a horseshoe also, but it was facing up. So I told Otto, see, your luck ran out. McIntyre's was holding good. And when Otto almost didn't make it, he made sure everybody else was picked up except the three guys who were lost on his boat. Then he tried to swim over. He was wearing the heavy sea boots and the leathers and everything, and he just made it to the side of Walker, HMS Walker, grabbed onto the scramble nets, and they didn't see him. They started to take off. And Otto told me that he was just about at the end of his endurance, and he was going to let go and die when somebody yelled, "Hey, the captain is down there." So McIntyre, the skipper of the British ship, stopped, sent two men over, one German and one Brit, to haul Otto back up, which they did, and they flopped him on the deck like an old sardine. And Otto told his German guide to go back down in the water and get his cap out of the water. It was not a white cap. Otto never wore the white cap because it was not regulation, he told me. But anyhow, his guy went back down and got the cap and gave it to him. I asked him, I said, why the hell did you need your cap? He said, well, I had to surrender my boat to the British skipper, and I had to be in uniform. You had to have known Otto. Everything was by the book with him. And he was laying there on the deck with his, seven and a half by 10 binoculars or whatever they were, those beautiful Zeiss binoculars that everybody wanted. And so one of his guys grabbed the binoculars, and McIntyre yelled down from the bridge, get those binoculars up here. They're mine. They're a prize of war. So after the war was over, years later, they got to be good friends. And the German crew and the British crew used to get together for dinner dances once a year, one time in Germany, one time in England, etc. And McIntyre gave him back his binoculars with a little brass plaque on it that said something about to an honorable foe or something like that. And I held those binoculars in my hand when I was visiting Otto in his home in Germany.
Did he have his cap still? That's nice. Did
he
have his cap?
No, he did not have his cap. Mm-hmm. Nope. It went over the side.
All right. U-107, picture number 26. There we go.
Right.
Here.
This is, this shows how these, that's from a ship they just sank, and this shows how those evil Nazis were machine gunning people in the water. They were throwing them bags of food and water. They had no way to take anybody aboard.
Right.
Because the submarine just doesn't have that much room. So, the sea is calm. I don't know which boat this was that they sank, which ship, or where they were in the ocean, but they at least gave them a chance to live. They gave them fresh water. They gave them food. They usually gave them a compass and told them which direction to steer for the closest land. If you look at the conning tower of the submarine, you'll see the four aces. And that was, what the heck's his name? I hate it when I don't have my files in front of me. But he wound up marrying the daughter of Admiral Dönitz, and she became a member of Shark Hunters, Ursula.
Wow, you've had some incredible people joining your organization over the years, decades.
Yeah, never met her, but we wrote back and forth.
Yeah, nice.
Hessler, that was the skipper, Gunter Hessler.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, number, heavy seas, number 27. U-108.
27.
That's a big mountain of water they're going up.
Yeah, it wasn't always like a mill pond. I mean, there were times it was heavy weather, and there was one submarine I can think of off top of them. I don't remember the number. It's in the file at home. When the entire bridge watch was washed overboard, and there was nobody up topside, and when it was time to change the watch, the next watch came up and found, whoops, we're all alone. The other guys were gone.
They were gone. They
and
were
so
just
after,
gone. That
yeah,
was it.
After that.
Gone.
Oh, yeah, no going back for them.
Right, sure.
And so they died out at sea. But we've got dozens of photos of U-108 in this particular book, peeling potatoes, enjoying a beer, having dinner, the skipper getting his hair cut, you know, just life on board. Not just the wild battle, but life on board.
All right, let's go on to, number 28.
28.
All right, go ahead.
This was, again, U-30, the first boat into the war. After a certain time, they put that one into a training flotilla, and the skipper, Fritz Julius Limp, and half of the crew, including my friend Georg Hugel, went on board U-110. And they got beat up and captured. And Limp opened the sea valves, but these Type 9s didn't go down as quickly as they should. And they were all in the water, and they saw the Brits send over a whaleboat with some people on board. So Limp went to go back to stop them from going on board. And the official story, which you'll find on those internet sites, says that Sub-Lieutenant David Ballin of the Brits shot Limp dead. And if that happened, he would have been within his rights because he was in combat. But he swears on his honor as an officer and a gentleman, he didn't shoot. And according to Georg Hugel, Limp was already in pretty bad physical shape. He was older. He was in his 30s. And so he thinks the 100-yard swim back to the boat in his full leathers must have tired him out, and he just sank. But at any rate, they got everything out of Georg Hugel's radio room, the codes, the code books, the Enigma machine.
Ouch.
They got everything.
Yeah, yeah. Was that the first Enigma that they got?
The first Navy Enigma, yeah. They got some other ones off weather ships, but they were only three-wheeled. The Navy ones were four wheels. And so they were towing it back, and they were going to bring it back in and say, hey, look, we got another one here. And then somebody said, hey, wait a minute. There's German spies everywhere. If they come pulling this thing in on a rope, somebody's going to say, hey, they must have got the codes. And then the Germans would have changed the codes. So she foundered and sank.
Really?
Amazing. Yeah.
And the crew?
Well, the crew that got everybody off, the only one that didn't make it was Limp, and that's because he died trying to get back to his boat.
So they opened the sea cocks and sank the boat rather than give up the... Okay,
right.
I gotcha.
Exactly.
Wow. Very interesting. Very interesting. All right, number 29. There's a freighter there with some camo paint on the side of it, looks like.
Yeah, that's one of the German raiders, supply ships, whatever you want to call them. Unlike the American boats, the Germans didn't have the range. Our submarines would leave Hawaii or Midway, and they had fuel to go all the way to the Japanese Empire and back without refueling. The German boats were originally built or designed for combat around Germany, and yet when they were going to the South Atlantic or off to the American coast, they had to get refueled. So this boat, Python, or Piton as it's called, was just one of them. We're coming out with another book all about who refueled from whom, when, and where. And that's a section in our magazine. A lot of people are interested in it. So we're putting out another book.
Is that possibly a fuel line we see draped across the deck? Going over to the other boat. See it? Number 29. It's right there on the right.
There it is. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And you got to hawser to keep the boat from... right. You got the first one is the hawser off the bow of the sub to the stern of the Python.
Sure.
But then the other hose running along there, that's a fuel hose.
All right. Very good. Number 30.
30. Triasic. Where the hell is 30? I've lost it.
U-128.
Oh, yeah.
Not a pretty picture. Nope.
No, unfortunately, and we've got quite a few photos in the book of the sequence leading up to this, but the swirl of water there is all that's left of U-128. It went down with all hands. But that's, unfortunately, that's what happens in war. You got to kill the other guy. Damn shame.
What kind of a plane would that be? What are we looking at there? That's not a PBY, I don't think. Seaplane of some kind, maybe.
Right, it's a flying boat of some type, but I
don't know.
Looks like a
pontoon
there.
See?
Right, that's an outer sponson.
No.
We would have that, excuse me, we would have that on the files at home.
Okay. All right. But now we've got two more pictures, 31 and 32, of the books. And if you're interested in history, you'll find so many pictures in each of these books. They're available. How do we get the books, Harry? Easiest way?
The easiest way is just go to sharkhunters.com, click on shop, click on books, find the one you like, click on that. You can either pay by card, credit, or debit, or use PayPal. We even take checks if you like.
All right.
And the price is all the same. Every book we sell, it's $25. Unless you're a member of Shark Hunters, then it's only $20. Unfortunately, we got to pay $8 per book shipping to Uncle Sam, or $15 overseas. We don't set the prices. The post office does.
All right. Number 34, we've got three U-boats in one frame, one shot. 135, U-460, and 608. What are they doing?
Right. 460 is a Type 7, 14 milk cow, Mishku. And he's refueling both 608 and 135 at the same time. These Type 14s carried a hell of a lot of fuel on board. They were nothing but a submarine gas pump. And unfortunately for them, they got wiped out real fast. Most of them didn't even last 6 months. Two reasons. One, they were a high priority target because if they could sink these guys, they could shorten the patrols of the front boats. And also, from what I've heard from other guys that have refueled from them, other veterans, security was horrible. On the Type 7 or the Type 9 getting the fuel, they had double lookouts. They had men on all the anti-aircraft guns, but on the Type 14, they'd be lounging at the rail, having a smoke, nobody watching the guns. So they didn't live long.
No. How do they get the lines,
the
refueling lines to the U-boats?
Either heaving or probably in a rubber boat.
I would think a boat of some kind would have to drag them out there. You don't want to get too close, especially in somewhat rough seas like that.
Right. No, you wouldn't want to get your submarines that close together. They bang into each other and they're going to sink.
Well, all right.
So it would
number
most likely
30,
be rubber boats.
I would think.
35.
Okay. That is warm weather. Tropics?
Yeah.
Crossing the equator?
Yeah, and
something like that?
Well, I don't know if they were in the equator, but they were in warm water. A warm area, you could see the guys are all running around in their what they call sport trunks, which are kind of skivvies. But here they're trading a torpedo. Sending a torpedo over to the other boat.
How the hell are they going to do that?
Which they could do in the early stages. Huh?
Float it?
Yeah, sure. Torpedoes float.
Oh, I didn't know that. Huh.
Yeah, they go, they've got depth keeping, like on a submarine. And if they quit running, if static. They'll usually pop to the surface so that they can be recovered.
Yeah. All right. Very interesting. All right. We got to keep moving.
And that's a type 7. Okay.
Say type,
that's a type
ahead.
7 receiving it. Type 7 that's receiving the torpedo.
Okay.
Now we come into a sad bunch. Number 36 is the Laconia, where U-156 sank the old Cunard liner Laconia, and they heard through the listening devices a whole lot of Italian yelling. Turned out there were a couple of thousand Italian prisoners on board the boat, on the ship, plus wives and dependents of British officers. So he came to the surface and broadcast out in clear on the international frequency. This is a German submarine. We're engaged in rescuing people, and no ship will be attacked. Please help. Unfortunately, a B-24, I think it was, came over, and they had a big Red Cross up there and everything, and this bomber come down, saw what was going on, and he left them alone and went to his base. I think it was on Ascension Island. I'm not sure what it was, but he went back to his base, reported, and his base commander says, go sink it. I don't care what they're doing. So he went back out and tried to sink it. His first bomb, his first bomb fell right into a lifeboat full of people. Didn't do them any good. So in one of our earlier issues of our magazine, we ran a whole story about that B-24 and all the problems it ran into after that. So I'll talk fast because I know we're up against the time.
Good. You got all these wonderful pictures. Want to give an idea of what's in the books. All right, number 43.
Right.
43? Am I at 43? Where am I? I'm sorry.
I don't know.
Let me go back. No,
we were at
37,
but if you look at 37 and 38, those are both U-156 people that are not engaged in combat.
No.
Then you go to 39, and you see the end of U-156. Hartenstein, the skipper, made the mistake of loafing along in the Caribbean under a beautiful sun, letting a bunch of his men up on deck to sunbathe, and he never saw the PBY Catalina creeping from cloud to cloud and came down and dropped those depth charges on both sides. The boat broke into three pieces and sank like a stone, and there were, I forget how many, but there were survivors. And the Navy plane dropped life rafts to them and survival packages, and the Navy came out to get them because they loved to capture the U-boat guys, but they never found these guys. And we've got quite a few pictures in the book of the survivors in the water. One guy even giving the finger to the airplane as it flew over. But unfortunately, they never found them.
Well, okay, number 40.
40 was a letter from, from a good friend of mine, Captain Helmut Witte. He was a Knight's Cross holder, and this was his submarine. His wife was the granddaughter of Engelbert Humperdinck, not the mop-haired singer, but the guy who wrote the opera Hansel and Gretel.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Let's skip 41 and we'll go to 42, because 41 is self-explanatory. 42, this is U-172, and it had been under command of Carl Emmermann, who was a member of Shark Hunters. And then he got transferred off, and his first watch officer, Herman Hoffman, became the skipper. He was a member, and he was with us when we went to South Africa, and he was several other tours in Germany with us. And he showed me this picture. And he was a nut for cameras when he was with us in South Africa. He had cameras and light meters all hanging all over him. So he showed me this picture. I said, what the hell's going on here? He said, well, you see the destroyer down there? Yeah. And the aircraft? Yeah. I said, they were attacking my submarine. And I took these pictures. I said, well, shouldn't you have been doing something else, like fighting your boat? Because about 10, 15 seconds after this picture was taken, he was swimming. They'd sunk his boat. But he was a photographer to the max there.
Wow. Wow. That looks like a 24 up there. Yeah, B-24. Looks like it.
Okay, it's hard to tell, but whatever it was, it clipped him.
So that boat went down.
172
went down. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Next up.
Now we're looking at 175, and this was another terribly, terribly tragic story. It had been attacked by the Coast Guard cutter Spencer. That was one of the 327 footers. The Coast Guard had a lot of combat in the war. A lot of people don't realize it. But this one, USCGC Spencer, beat this boat up so bad. You look on the deck, the railings are all bashed up and there's smoke coming out the conning tower.
Oh, yeah.
And they were getting ready to abandon ship. And see this guy standing there that I've got circled?
Sure.
He was just trying to find a way to stay alive, the poor bastard. And some guy on the cutter, a 20-millimeter gunner, just opened fire on this guy with his 20-millimeter and cut the guy right in half. And a couple of our members were on board that cutter, and they said there were fights over this, and that nobody would talk to this guy after that because it was horrible and senseless. And the Americans thought it was wrong as hell, too. So I guess this gunner got his ass kicked a bit, as well he should have.
Should have been more than that. Eye for an eye. All right.
Yeah.
Number
44. This was U-178, and Ibikin, the skipper, was the oldest skipper in the U-boats, and that was his son there, Dirk, and it's a little pedal car, and when the war was over, some Brits thought it was a secret weapon, so let's flip on then to 45, and there's this little boy in this pedal car, and unfortunately, as it says, sometime in the 1970s, the car was put out with the garbage, and that piece of history is gone forever.
Wow. There's an upside-down horseshoe on the conning tower, too. Look at it. See it?
Mm-hmm.
On the pedal car.
Okay.
Upside-down horseshoe.
On the pedal car. Oh, yeah, but that's supposed to represent the life rings. The life ring. In the early stages of the U-boats, they had to have a horseshoe-shaped life ring on the conning tower. They got rid of that after a while because when they had to dive, they had to pull that inside and drop it down the hatch. So they got rid of that after a while.
Got it. Okay. Number 46.
46 just shows how they improvised. They were in safe waters in the Indian Ocean and rigged up a shower so the guys could go out in small numbers and take a saltwater shower.
Mm-hmm.
I'll run through some of these quickly because there's some that make sense. 201, U-boat 201, that's Oliver Schnee playing the accordion. He was first officer on Kretschmer's U-23, and then he got his own boat here. Next one, number 48, shows how U-209 set up an attack on ships in a convoy, the angle of the torpedo to hit the ship.
Got it.
Photo 49, U-215. I put this one up because it's a very, very rare submarine. It was a Type 7F, a mine layer. They added another section, I think it was 25 foot long, to drop mines. And they only made four of these boats. They made well over 1,000 submarines, but only four of these Type 7F. And this one is sunk, I think, off of the East Coast, Cape Cod, or something like that. I'd have to look at the record.
Okay.
Now, this next one is very important. This is U-233. It's a Type 10B mine layer, and it was sunk about 1,000 miles east of the American coast. Some guy up in New England by the name of Brooks came up with a scam. He was claiming that this boat got into combat with a dirigible, with a blimp, and got banged up, shot down the blimp, K-74, I think it was, and got banged up so badly it just snuck into Casco Bay, sat down on the bottom, and everybody just sat there and died on board the boat. And he was allegedly collecting money from lots of people to find this boat. And even, and we kept saying, we kept telling people, this boat ain't in Casco Bay. And the action report of the blimp indicated that it was just pilot error. They crashed because they weren't paying attention. But this guy was making all sorts of money at it. And they came along later, and they claimed they found the wreck of a freighter off the American East Coast, which they did. But they also claimed it was full of platinum, about $3 billion worth.
Well, everybody
and we
knows
worked
that.
Very hard. Yeah, right. That's all they carried. And we worked very hard with one of our members, Paul Lawton, who's an attorney up there in New England, to get these guys exposed. They were getting money left and right. People handing them money because they wanted part of that platinum.
Please.
And they were living the good life. They had a big ship, and they were driving very nice SUVs. And finally, we had enough pressure. And I talked to a lot of the newspapers and radio stations up there, et cetera. They finally cracked down on these guys. But unfortunately, the statute of limitations had gone by. And so they didn't go to jail, but they lost their meal ticket.
Ah, there's a sucker born every moment for these con artists. Sickening.
Yeah.
Okay, onward.
Onward to 51. This is a very unique U-boat, U-234. Also a Type 10B mine-carrying submarine, but was converted into cargo. And it was on its way to Japan when the war ended. It was in the North Atlantic, and it surrendered in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, at our Navy Yard. And you'll see in this picture, 51, U.S. Navy guys all over it. Robert Oppenheimer was all over it. He's the guy that invented our bomb. There were two Japanese technical officers. Japan was still at war with the U.S., even though Germany had surrendered, so they couldn't let the U.S. get them. So they committed suicide, not in the time-honored harakiri of cutting their guts open, but they took phenobarbital and died whimpering and crying in each other's arms.
Okay.
This boat, yeah, not a noble way to die, I guess. This boat had on board all sorts of stuff, including an ME-262 jet fighter in crates with all the technological data for the Japanese to start building them. It had 560 kilos of uranium on board, and it also had Dr. Heinz Schlicke on board, who perfected the infrared exploders, detonators that we needed in our atom bomb. He was also a member of Shark Hunters, Dr. Schlicke.
The uranium on board, is that the uranium that is suggested to have composed one of our two atomic bombs that we dropped in Japan? We did use German uranium on one of them. That's the word. Don't know if it's true.
Right. That would have, if that was this stuff, that would have been Hiroshima, because the Nagasaki bomb was a plutonium bomb.
Gotcha.
Hiroshima was a uranium bomb.
Okay.
And if you look at photo 52, where I've got it circled, that shows the manifest. This was translated into
uranium
English.
Oxide, yeah.
Uranium oxide, 560 kilos, which is about 1,200 pounds. It was in gold-lined stainless steel flasks.
I still believe that Germany had the bomb but didn't use it. Hitler was afraid that we had lots of bombs and we were going to level Germany from one end to the other if he used one. That's another story. A lot of stories.
Yeah, the reasoning behind why he didn't want to do it is up to conjecture, but it's pretty well determined that Germany did detonate some bombs before
Correct.
The end of the war.
And supposedly they were found in some railroad cars in Czechoslovakia, I believe, some of them tactical weapons, not huge, but they were nuclear.
Right.
That's
yeah. And all you had to do was increase your sizes and then you increase your yield. That was my career field in the Air Force, was special
mm-hmm.
weapons.
Mm-hmm.
Photo 53, that's the end of U-234. This was in 1947, I think November, because there was an agreement between the Brits and the Americans that by the end of 47, all German submarines would be destroyed, all the ones that Britain had and the U.S.
Stupid.
What can I say?
Stupid. They each would have earned back their cost of rehabilitation in 1 year of tourist traffic. Think about
right.
it. All right, 1942, U-255. What do we got here? We got a Blossom.
255. This was another one of our members. Rash was his name.
Great
the skipper
picture.
Of 255. The plane landed. I guess it needed refueling. That's a Blumenvoss BV-137, mm-hmm. an amazing airplane. Three engines. You'll notice that the middle one has a four-bladed prop, when the other ones only had a three-bladed prop on the two wing engines,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and it was on diesel. So once they got into the air, these things could stay up forever. And one of these guys landed in the lake in Berlin and took some people on board and flew them up to Norway.
That's
we
the word.
Not quite. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this,
out in the middle of that
this
lake.
Photo came to us, this photo came to us right from the skipper. You'll notice all his handwritten stuff down there.
Mm-hmm.
Probably by tomorrow, these internet sites will have snatched it and posted it.
This is all copyrighted, by the way, for you people out there, so don't try it.
Right.
Just show some class. All right, we're sharing it with you, and don't steal. Stealing isn't cool. Okay, what do we got here?
Number 55.
Real quick, number
55. 55. Up in Spitsbergen. This was common for a lot of the U-boats. This was U-307. They'd hunt polar bears, and everybody had a good time except for the polar bear. He wasn't having fun.
Jeez.
Number 56.
Okay.
This was our friend Ali Kramer, Peter Eric Kramer, and mm-hmm. he got crashing with a Canadian flower class Corvette. I think it was HMCS Snowflake mm-hmm. or something like that, and got his boat tore up pretty good, but he still made it back alive.
Yeah.
And then last of the photos, 57, the skipper is not dead, he's not wounded, he's just catching some Z's on the deck. And look at those binoculars. That's what McIntyre took off of Kretschmer.
Everybody wanted
and then gave
those
back to
binoculars.
Him.
Yeah, that's...
those things, now they're worth a ton of money.
Yeah. Wow. What a tour, Harry. What a wonderful picture tour of just a terribly tragic era in human history again, financed by the bankers, both sides. So all they do is play war, and we pay the price. Remarkable.
Yeah, they never got into the war themselves. They just sent all the young people on either side.
It's the way it always goes. So good. Okay, we have just a little bit of time, tiny, tiny bit. What do you want to say? Anything else besides Merry Christmas?
If you want. Yeah, you're darn right, Merry Christmas. And if I say Merry Christmas in a store and they come back with Happy Holidays, boy, I light them up good. I didn't say Happy Holidays. I said Merry Christmas. Hey, I'm an old fart here in Florida. They can't hit me or they'll go to jail.
Good job. Very good.
Well, so go to sharkhunters.com, go to shop, go to books, and there they are.
There they are. All right. Thank you on behalf of all who care about history for preserving what you have done so magnificently. You did it. Nobody else did. Not like this.
Thank you.
So, you talked to, you're welcome. Been in touch with Martine lately?
No, haven't heard much from Martine. Have you?
Yeah, I got a note or two. I'll pass it on to you.
Okay. All I've heard lately is that the vax mandates and are not opening up much, and you got a quarantine down there.
No. All right. Okay, Harry. Merry Christmas to you and Kay and everybody.
Merry Christmas yourself.
Okay. All right. Thanks. We'll talk.
Take care.
All right. Be right back with more.
Researchers, eyewitnesses, and incredible subjects, all in MP3 commercial-free.